Soft Tattooed Millionaires podcast. I'm Jack, and like always, I'm joined by my older brother Max in Chicago. Max, how's things? What's new?
Things are pretty good. I haven't discovered any new Michael Bradley murals or anything like that. And so things are steady. No surprises for me. But yeah.
Cool. I'm good. I was trying to find a picture of that mural online. So if the next time you go by, you should definitely snap a photo of it.
Yeah, I biked through that area this week actually, but was like biking through crazy traffic, and I was trying to find Michael Bradley, but didn't want to take my eyes off the road, so to speak. Anyway, so that's on my like must accomplish as an American soccer fan list. So don't worry.
Yeah.
That's in the works.
Unlike the real Michael Bradley, you have no composure in traffic. But anyways, what were you going to say?
That's true. Fair enough. I was going to say that it occurred to me that this is this mural's on 18th Street. Also on 18th Street, about 2 miles away, Soccer House. The U.S. Soccer Federation's headquarters. So it occurs to me that maybe in the dead of night, it's one of Sunil Gulati's dying moves. He snuck out to Pilsen and painted this Michael Bradley.
Oh, that's a beautiful thought. All right, Max, I have a question for you.
We've got no time to dilly-dally because so much nonsense and stuff has happened in American soccer in the last week. So let's talk.
Yeah, this is definitely dilly-dallying. How old is Freddy Adu?
Oh, my God. Is Freddy Adu older than Jonathan Lipnicki?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, you don't know anything, man. He's that annoying kid who's in like the Jerry Maguire movie.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how old he is.
Exactly. You know, like Freddie Adu is like the child actor of soccer.
I know.
I would say that Freddie Adu is 26.
Well, that's pretty good. He's actually 28, which surprised me. I thought he would be 32.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is he flamed out, but like so early, and he was so young.
How many clubs do you think he's played for?
5.
14.
What?
Yes.
I mean, like, does that go... Wow.
Yeah. He's played in Portugal, Monaco, Greece, Turkey, Brazil, Serbia, Finland, the U.S. In 14 years, he has managed to get 195 appearances, which...
So he's 28, but, like, he's really, like, 52 in soccer age.
Yeah, I mean, like...
He's like, a journeyman. He's played on like at every second division across Europe.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky to like 195 appearances in 14 years is not good at all. Like Chris Wondolowski has 313 appearances in 14 years, but the reason why I'm bringing Freddy Adu up is that he started this week for the Las Vegas Lights, and I was kind of thinking about him, but he got subbed off in like the 51st. He got subbed off in like the 51st minute, so it wasn't. Wasn't a great game for him, but he did record the franchise's first ever assist when they played against DC United in a preseason friendly. So,
okay,
that's something.
Yeah, I don't like all that Schadenfreude that goes on with Freddie Adu. It sucks that he didn't develop and all that kind of stuff. But best wishes to him, and I hope this is good for him.
Yeah, same. All right. Well, before we get into,
I've got a question for you.
Oh, fuck! What is it?
Who's the first MLS coach to get fired this year?
The first, who do I think it will be?
Yep.
Brian Schmetzer.
Really?
Actually, no. It just came out of my mouth, but I think about the CCL, thinking about the injury problems. That's a really bad guess. Who do I think will be the first? I mean, Ben Olsen?
That's a good guess too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking of Paunovic. The Chicago Fire coach, which is basically like the same deal as DC United.
Yeah, you know,
they should
be doing better given the talent that these teams have on their rosters.
Yeah, and at franchises that are teams that have higher expectations in a sense. All right, well let's get rolling.
Yeah. So before we go into 3-on-3 off, I just wanted to quickly recap some of the scores from this weekend. So here we go. Remy Guardiola's defense helpless against Red Bulls, who won 3-1. DC United beat the Crew 1-0 at the Annapolis Navy Marine Corps Stadium. Portland outgunned Minnesota 3-2. Sporting KC and Seattle played out a 2-2 draw, as did San Jose and the Dynamo, as did Atlanta and NYCFC, which is the game that just ended, FC Dallas actually managed to win a game for once, thanks to a Ja'Cory Hayes goal. Galaxy beat Chicago thanks to Zlatan's third eye. LAFC bounced back with a 2-0 win over Vancouver. And Orlando overcame a Philadelphia Union side that took 19 shots but couldn't manage a single goal. And then in the NWSL, North Kakalaki maintained their perfect record. Chicago Red Stars ruined the Utah Royals' first ever home match. And Seattle beat Sky Blue FC by 1-0. There was one game that was finishing up as I was writing these notes. So let me just real quick see who won that game. Yeah, the Portland Thorns beat the Orlando Pride 2-1. So let's move on to three on, three off. You are three off this week, right?
Yes, three off.
All right, Britt, what is the first thing you're taking off the field?
Man, I'm going to go with Brad Guzan's steady hands.
absolutely.
Which, he got a hand on the David Villa penalty kick, couldn't save it, and had another ball come into the box that he got hands on and then muffed, was able to recover, but didn't look the steadiest between the sticks, let's just say, in that game. So still a lot to be I don't know. I guess I don't want to
that's the question, right? Like, is there still a lot to be?
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly. Brad Guzan, maybe Atlanta should think about, rather than spending money on another creative player who fits into their unlimited creativity offense, working on bulking up that defense a little bit.
Yeah. I was watching the Sky Sports stream, and whenever they showed a replay of that penalty, it was from behind the goal, which is really weird. So I couldn't tell how much contact Guzan got on that ball. Could you tell me? Because I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, I think he got sort of the bottom of the hand on it.
Okay, what percentage of hand meat was touching that ball?
Well, I think that's the tricky thing, is because I think he got maybe 10 to 20% of his hand meat on the ball, but part of that was also, I think, kind of misreading it a little bit and not getting his hand to the right place. So it wasn't just he got his hand there and he couldn't stop it. It was more he really had not, he guessed the right way, but he didn't really, he kind of muffed it.
Yeah, it seemed like an eminently savable penalty, but also hopefully we get our first explicit rating by saying hand meat and ball so close together.
I think I also said he muffed it, so.
Oh, good. Great. Awesome. Well,
do you have thoughts
about that game?
Yeah, I want to talk about Barco, unless that's something that you're going to talk about later on.
No, I mean, I don't plan on talking about him, but
okay. So he made his debut in something the 60th minute. He seemed very fast, as you said, and he seemed also very small. The first thing he did on the field was run somebody over, and then the rest of the things he did on the field were pretty much get run over. And he didn't know, but I shouldn't say that as if he was, had a negative contribution to the game, because actually he was really bright. He made lots of good runs. He was fast. He turned the corner a couple times and he did some creative things. You see, wow, he's really not afraid. He doesn't look like a kid on the field, but he did look like he needed to play smarter and to realize that in MLS, people are just going to go over him unless he defends his physical space on the field a little bit better. So some look very technical, look very fast, but not quite up to the strength of MLS right now.
Yeah, so you've never met my dog. My dog is named Shelly. She is about a year old, and she's very, 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 very fast. But if she sees another dog taking a dump, she will run full speed into it and knock the dog over. She's running, yeah, it's really bizarre. It's hilarious for me.
You didn't train her to do this, right?
No, God no. But also, similarly with trees, if she's running full speed and there's a tree in front of her, instead of swerving, she'll jump up and turn her body so that the impact is on her side, and she'll just bounce off the tree and then keep running. So Ezekiel Barca sort of reminds me of my dog, where she just runs full speed into really bad situations.
It's too bad you already named your dog Shelly and you couldn't name it Ezekiel Barco,
B-A-R-K-O. Oh, Barco would be so good.
Yeah.
Oh, dang it. That is amazing. Well, I do plan on getting a second dog. So, all right. Well, moving on. Enough about my lovely dog. And I want to put Salt Lake City as a whole on the field this week because the Utah Royals sold out their inaugural home game at Rio Tinto Stadium on Saturday. So even though they lost to Chicago 1-0, the 19,000 fans made it feel like a win. And I know how corny that sounds, but the NWSL doesn't receive enough support. With the Royals' success, we see that clubs not called the Portland Thorns can sell out stadiums. So after what happened with the Boston Breakers this offseason, I think this is precisely the storyline that NWSL needed. Way to go, Salt Lake. Now, please find a name that isn't shared with a pre-existing sports franchise in your country.
Yeah, I think the to add on to that too, it's not just the level of, or not just like the fan support, but the like the facilities for the athletes, like Becky Sauerbrunn and other players have talked about how like they walk in the locker room and it's like a real locker room with like nice carpet in the locker room area and like good facilities, and they're like, this is not like the NWSL. No, not really
We are
is.
being treated with respect.
Yeah, and so that's awesome to see.
Yeah. Can I tell you what I'd like for them to be called?
Yeah.
The Miraculous Gulls, or just the Gulls. Have you ever heard about the Miracle of the Gulls?
No.
It's so in 1848, there was a plague of crickets, and all these Mormon pioneers were going to starve to death. And then what happened was that the seagulls showed up and ate all the crickets, and saved the crop. So in Salt Lake, there's like monuments to seagulls for saving all of these Mormon pioneers. So I think the Salt Lake Gulls would be kind of nice, but whatever. That's just my two cents.
It's like, yeah, that would be.
Better than the
Is it
Royals.
Brighton and Hove Albion that are
Yeah.
the Seagulls? And apparently they started that as like a counter to Crystal Palace's Eagles. And
Really?
then, and apparently Crystal Palace chants like Eagles, and then so they started chanting Seagulls.
That's great.
So I would be 100% for stealing that name for for an American soccer team.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, what's the second thing you're taking off the field?
I mentioned him before, but Paunovic at the Chicago Fire and the Chicago Fire in general, Paunovic looks like an emaciated Aaron Rodgers. And
Sounds hot.
the Fire have only won one game this year, and maybe we're lucky to have won that game. Bastian Schweinsteiger was fooled for the goal to Zlatan, and it looks maybe like Chicago Fire's decent run last year is, well, it's early in the season. I'm concerned that it was sort of a 1 year sort of thing with a bunch of aging older players playing up and playing well, and they've yet to hit their stride this year, and it's frustrating to see. So still lots of the season left, obviously, but I am not super optimistic.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, when you see a team that has its own stadium, it sucks that it's so far away. But I like the way their stadium looks on TV. I haven't been down to there. It's Bridgeview, is that where it is?
Yes, Bridgeview, I think that's what
Think that's what it's called. I don't know, but I don't know, but I just want them to do better. Long gone are the days of Guatemec Blanco for the Chicago Fire, which I remember fondly. All right, the.
I will say I got a shout out in some way to the Chicago Fire, who I don't know how many MLS teams do the. This is definitely gonna. Well, this would earn us the exclusive rating, in a sense. But I don't know how many teams do the Puto cheer, but Chicago Fire
Do
does.
they really?
Yeah, the fans do.
Such complicated emotions about that cheer. Yeah.
Fond memories, but
Moving,
also, yeah,
but
offensive
also a
cheer.
lot of like self-disgust. Yeah. Oof. All right. So the second thing or the second person really I'm putting on the field this week is Gianluca Busio. I know this is late, but I think it's worth mentioning. So he's the youngest player in Sporting KC history, 15 years old. And he made his professional debut earlier this month with the Swope Park Rangers and was named to the USL Team of the Week. His first half against Colorado Springs saw him complete 30 of 30 passes with one assist. He was called up to the U17 team this week for the Sport Chain Cup in Spain, where he'll be playing two games each against India and Norway. So he's a hugely talented prospect, midfielder forward, and it should be mentioned that he either has or qualifies for a European passport. I know his parents are Italian, so.
Yeah, so when you say that he's the youngest player, blah, 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 yeah, he's 15.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's insane.
A 15-year-old playing against men, and he completes 30 of 30 passes. I think he finished the game with 47 of 50 passes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. So that is awesome.
I know. We are so desperate for attacking talent.
It's really true. He's got like anyone. Well, I shouldn't say he's 15. He's so young. But anyone who shows like a solid, you know, just a flash of like ability in a forward or attacking position, it's like all eyes are on them because of that reason. That we're at the same time we're kind of like have so many middle. Kind of central midfield prospects that we're like, oh, yeah, that's a great player, but will he actually play?
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Yeah. Someone to be excited for. I think the hype train is beginning to really build up steam for Gianluca Busio. Not a name I can say very easily for some reason. But anyways, what's the second thing you're taking off the field?
Well, you're going to count it. This is the third thing. Yeah. I'm tied between these two last things that I was considering taking off. But I will say, as long as we're talking about young players, I'll take off the River Derby. Schalke and Dortmund played each other again this week, and the first River Derby obviously was a hugely exciting game, but it failed to live up to the hype of like American versus American. Which obviously that's just marketing stuff, but at the same time, as a fan, you know, you're looking forward to seeing Pulisic and McKennie play. The first River Derby, McKennie gets taken off in like the 12th minute after Dortmund had scored like 17 goals or whatever it was, and he gets subbed off for an attacking player, Harit. And then in this derby, he doesn't start but gets subbed on in the 60th minute. He contributes, his foul is what leads to the second goal. He gets fouled. And then they get a free kick. Schalke gets a free kick, which is the second goal. But you really didn't get to see, like, as hoped for, the sort of like American on American matchup with a lot of drama around it. It ended up being tamer than that. And so for two derbies, high profile, both players on the pitch, we haven't really gotten like a great story out of that about that aspect of being two Americans playing each other.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I watched a little bit of it today, but I didn't feel the need to watch it all.
And about that game too. So I mentioned the foul that McKennie earned. The free kick by Schalke. They did one of those things where a guy goes over the ball, someone behind him does a sneak attack sort of thing, whatever you want to call that. And
I like the sneak attack.
I think there's a little like, oh, is the ball behind your ear? Okay, there it is. And Pulisic charged forward to block it from the wall, you know, once the ball was in play. And he sort of jumps to block it, and then while at the same time ducking out of the way of the ball, and it ended up going in the net. So it was this kind of like weird moment of failed heroism from Pulisic that ended up looking kind of bad on him too. So anyway, River Derby failed on many drama points this week.
Yeah, indubitably. All right. Well, I know you put Jacory Hayes on the field last week, but I want to keep him on because I thought he was outstanding against the Revs.
Yeah.
It just seemed like he was sort of a pass ahead of everybody else on the field, particularly when the opposition had just like recovered the ball and were starting to spring a counterattack. It seemed like so many counterattacks from the Revs died at Jacory Hayes' feet. He was just always tracking back. Recovery after recovery. I think sometimes because Rudy dropped so deep, going forward, the attack for Dallas can feel really crowded. But Hayes is kind of always looking for space. It seems like he's completely uncomfortable with being within like 5 feet of a teammate. So he's always looking for pockets, and that's exactly how he got the winning goal. I really liked watching him this week.
Yeah, that goal was great. It was
just smart.
It was smart and it was decisive. He doesn't have time to take a touch on the box, and he has to just hit it right away and does it. The last thing that I was considering taking off this week was all the FC Dallas Play the Kids haters, And because I know that we both sometimes have we've talked about how FC Dallas maybe has an undeserved reputation as being this great youth academy. And we're not the only ones to say that. Lots of people say that. Not that they're not undeserved, but that they have a great reputation for developing talent. But then you look at it and you're like, well, what have they really done? And where does that reputation really come from? They're very focused on it, so kudos to them. But I was going to take off all the FC Dallas haters, play the kids haters, because this week that goal and Ja'Cory Hayes parting it was awesome. And Reggie Cannon played a part in like setting up a pass, a couple passes before that. And, you know, you saw this like, oh, actually, we just watched FC Dallas, you know, play two young American players. Reggie Cannon, however old he is, like 18, 19. Forget. And then Ja'Cory Hayes, like 22 or 21.
And, 22.
And so, you know, while we sort of feel hot and cold about FC Dallas, you know, they are doing it, and they deserve credit for that too.
Yeah. And I would just want to add, I forgot, or I didn't forget, but I guess I wasn't thinking that about, you know, Kellen Acosta is injured right now. And when he gets back on the field, I think he's a big deal on that team. I think it'll people will be reminded, like, oh yeah, never mind, FC Dallas, they definitely play their products.
Yeah, there's that to be exciting, and it looks like Ja'Cory Hayes has earned a spot, and so when Acosta comes back, Hayes is going to be staying on the field, so that's super exciting. We're going to have three homegrown young players on the field.
Isn't it crazy how much central midfield talent we have as Americans?
Why do you think that is?
So I'm just sort of spitballing right now. So do you remember in January when they announced that we're going to be a 4-3-3 going forward, like all U.S. teams?
So you're saying we should be like a 1-8-1 where we just develop our offers.
No. But like I don't think that they would make that announcement if Christian Pulisic didn't exist, right? Like, if we didn't have an incredibly exciting prospect who plays incredibly well in that system, we wouldn't have said, yeah, we're going to go with a 4-3-3, right? Like, that announcement is based on the kids who are coming up right now. So I'm just sort of wondering what happened systemically during, you know, Tyler Adams, Ja'Cory Hayes, West McKennie, like during these guys, or what's his name from Toronto, Delgado, like who's playing that the U.S. suddenly said, okay, we need to emphasize central midfield. Was it Bradley? You know, I don't think he made that much of a splash, but maybe he got wrong, or maybe it's just...
I doubt that, like, Ja'Cory Hayes at all had, like, Michael Bradley posters on their walls. Maybe they did. Yeah. But my guess is that, I don't know. I feel like I'm in danger of speaking in a generalization, but maybe it's the kind of the American thing that as Americans we have less true high level skill, but we're really athletic. And so, and that, I know it sounds weird for a midfielder, but maybe that's kind of like what allows us to be these sort of like box to box / track people down, you know, like run hard kind of athletes in us. And so we've kind of evolved into producing that kind of talent while still failing to produce like really great finishers or really great creative number 10 kind of types.
Yeah. Or center backs.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense now that I think about it. Cause why did the things we used to be good at, like keepers, like center backs are at least decent enough at that. And that sort of thing. Now it just seems like we go through these weird cycles. I have no explanation for it. Maybe it's just that we have such a small talent pool at the top level that it's just whatever players and positions end up hitting, that we end up having a skewed roster for that reason.
Yeah, I do think that in general, like globally speaking, soccer is getting worse and worse at defending. Especially if you watch the Champions League the last couple of weeks, where there's all these incredible comebacks and, you know, like Barcelona is leaking three goals. That didn't used to be as common. Certainly not three games in a week where there's these incredible comebacks and, you know, it's just like a shooting gallery. So I think perhaps maybe the game is in general changing and, you know, the U.S. has about the same level of talent as it always has had, but the focus has shifted and we're just kind of going along with it, but... I don't know.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that like Barcelona needs some of the Jesse Marsh style of CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah. Yeah. Except not this
where
last game.
There's one goal total. Like, nailed it. Okay.
Well, I mean, especially like high profile managers that play defensively get so much shit unless you coach Juventus. For some reason, that is the only club where you are allowed to have an organized defense, right? But
is that true, or is it just true because Jose Mourinho is so terrible that he makes everybody, he just makes on average, and any major coach that tries to stifle the other just ends up like a seeing like such a jerk.
Well, I'm trying to think. I feel like because most of the news we get for international soccer is through a British perspective, so I think a team like Burnley that's pretty well organized defensively, people just don't like, people love Sean Dyche, right? So and I think it's because he's so British, but I think that people probably wouldn't love Burnley as much if it were, you know, some mid-level Italian guy running this.
That's true. If it was like Tedesco, you know, like at Schalke, like, oh yeah, he's really organized his team well, or that kind of thing. But I mean, they've got different styles, so that's not a comparison. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, like, I don't know. That's a really interesting question, like how much of our soccer knowledge and vocabulary comes from different countries. Obviously, like coming, it's going to come from other English-speaking countries a lot for people like us. Not just because we watch the Premier League, but because like we get those commentators commentating on our games. Mm-hmm. And that does really skew the way you think about the game. That's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm like just fascinated sometimes when you flip on, and forgive me if this sounds obvious, but you turn on the Bundesliga and you're just like, oh, wait, there's just totally different styles out there. And again, that's so obvious, but it's still so striking going from league to league.
Yeah, I mean, I love watching the same game in English and Spanish. Like, especially when it's on BN Sports and then BN Sports NA. You know, it's fascinating to see the difference, but maybe we should stop talking about not Americans as we complain about like the British people being nativists. Let's let's talk about the CONCACAF Champions League and indeed that Jesse Marsh style.
Yeah. So what did you make of that? I mean, how do you feel about the Red Bulls as a whole? You know, give us a grade on their CONCACAF Champions League performance.
I mean, as a whole, I think it's great. You know, you could, this year is undoubtedly a success for the Red Bulls.
Didn't they have a decent amount of like shots or something too? I feel like it was a weird game where they. Let me pull up the stats here.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like I should have done some more homework before doing this. Yeah, no, they had like in the 0-0 second leg, they had 20 shots, 9 shots on target. So the weird thing about that, though, is that I think that you're right in the sense that, like, the Red Bulls, like, were really defensive and smart and counterattacking for a lot of CONCACAF Champions League and then ended up in the last game. And so, and I think they got lucky earlier in the tournament where they you know, like, they bunkered and survived. Was it Cruz Azul or
– I can't remember right now. I don't know.
I'm so blanking. Oh no, Tijuana. Yeah, they like bunkered and survived against Tijuana, despite like giving up a bunch of shots to Tijuana. They scored those like two counterattacking goals in the first leg of that tie, and so that really kind of like established their, or that was like their road to success in the early parts of the tournament. Give up more shots, but just hit them harder, want to counterattack. And then in this game, they ended up getting more shots, doing all this stuff, but nothing fell their way. So I think they got some luck early in the tournament and then ran out of luck in this last game. So I think all told, you know, they put themselves in a position to be successful, got lucky early, got less lucky late. And yeah, I have to be impressed with that. And also have to be impressed with how they managed their roster too. As dumb as that sounds, you know, like
yeah, the Toronto's, other MLS teams didn't.
Yeah, Toronto's at the bottom of the table. Seattle's at the bottom of the table, and the Red Bulls have been doing well.
I wonder.
or I mean, they're middle of the table, but they've been able to do all the things, and the other MLS teams have not been able to do all the things.
Yeah, that's a good point that I don't think will probably get enough attention, and I think we can both agree that it is great to see Toronto sort of humiliate Club America. And I'm saying humiliate because not in that it was like a total domination, but just the fact that Club America is losing to Toronto is humiliating for them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like going to like, yeah, the Azteca and winning that game, or not winning the game, drawing that game, but winning, you know, winning the tie or whatever. Am I saying that right? Is a tie the single match, or is a tie the together two matches?
Together, right? Who cares?
Yeah, this is. I shouldn't use these fake words.
Whatever, okay. We're gonna sound like jackasses. It doesn't matter.
True story. Anyway, so yeah, like I agree. It's. I mean, it's such like a body blow to Liga MX and CONCACAF Champions League that Toronto FC can beat Club America.
And I mean, they have to be the favorites going against Chivas.
Yeah, I saw you tweet something to that effect that, you know, Toronto is just a better team than Chivas.
I mean, and then yeah, I tweeted that thing, and then Derek, who we've had on before to talk about MLS in Austin, asked me, well, who do you want to win? You know, and it's sort of tricky. It's sort of the team that I owe my soccer fandom to, Chivas, the first team I really started watching and following, versus an MLS team filled with people that I blame for a very, very large portion of pain I carry around daily.
I mean, that's true. But I think this, you know, like this, maybe what this shows us is that, yeah, we've got all that pain locked inside, struggling to express itself. But it's a healthy reminder that, like, that Bradley and Josie are going to be doing constructive, positive things for American soccer. And if they win the final, that's like a huge step forward for American soccer, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they do that, that's awesome. And they really continue to contribute to American soccer in that way.
Yeah,
even if they do so in Canada.
Yeah. It's so funny to hear people talk about Toronto FC in the CCL and just realize, like, American fans are fans of the MLS project, right? Like, we are fans of the league. I will continually be amazed by this. Like, no other league is, like, no one's a fan of, like, yeah. Or actually, I think the NBA has fans because the NBA is progressive. But, like, nobody's like, yeah, the NFL. Like, yeah, the MLB.
That's because of who we are as, like, Americans. But, like, it's like this. I think Japan and Korea sometimes have this approach. At least, like you see when, for example, when Sun plays with Spurs, and they show like what it shows on Korean television, where it's like it's just like Sun versus like the other team. It's not even Spurs; it's just Sun. And or like when some of these major Japanese stars come to play in Major League Baseball, same sort of thing, where it's like, I remember when Kenta Maeda hit his like a home run in his first game for the Dodgers, like they cut to a shot of what was going on in Japan. And it was like the entire stadium in Japan filled with people watching the game on the Jumbotron.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I feel like American soccer, because we're like, you know, in those leagues, I think like, you know, Korean soccer or Korean baseball or Japanese baseball are sort of like the stepbrother or they're stepped down from these other leagues. And so when your biggest and best stars graduate, or you're seeing them break into these, like these leagues that are still the gold standard, you know, the way like Pulisic,
yes, exactly.
That like, you know, we're all nuts about. And so I think there is like, some parallels, but you have to kind of think differently because we're just so used to being top dogs in America when it comes to our sports.
Yeah. Do you want to make a prediction on the final? Doesn't have to be a scoreline prediction.
I mean, I think Toronto's going to win. I think that, and actually I think it'll be, I'll be bold and I'll say, I think it'd be comfortable. Toronto has taken care of business, and they are, you know, kind of putting, all their eggs in one basket. you know, like they're not playing some of their players in MLS to keep them fresh for this, and they are really focused on that. And so I think they're favorites, and I think it'll be they're starting in Toronto, and I think they'll get an early lead, and then they'll win comfortably the first game, and then they'll have a cushion in the second game to kind of see it out like they did against Club America.
I am curious as to if there's going to be a power shift, like a true power shift between the American League and Liga MX, or between MLS and Liga MX. I don't know why I said it like that, because another thing that's happening in Liga MX right now is that the owners of Liga MX teams are being called to end their so-called gentleman's agreement, which basically just means that you can't sell a player to a club unless all the owners agree. It makes it really hard for players to leave the country. It makes it even harder for them to come back. So I think if, you know, MLS consistently starts beating Liga MX teams and the salaries are sort of commensurate, you're going to see a lot more younger players from Liga MX come to the MLS. One person in particular I think could be tempted is Pizarro from Chivas, who is frustrated at Chivas, is a great attacking talent, lovely creative player, and I don't know. I'm just curious to see what will happen, and I hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like it's not the Pizarro kind of person, but Dos Santos, Carlos Vela, you know, we're seeing a lot of Mexican stars. And they seem very comfortable. And, you know, there was a recent interview with the Dos Santos brothers about, and I think it was with Herc Gomez, and he was sort of teasing him about MLS versus Liga MX, and asked him, like, oh, if the LA Galaxy played in Liga MX, would they win? And they laughed. They're like, oh, yeah, of course. But it's saying it as a joke. Or saying it as like, oh, we're confident our team, we're going to win. But I think that it does seem like there's been a shift where it just seems more possible for Mexican talent to play in MLS.
Well, I want to quick ask you, so PSG won the title today, or they wrapped up the title. Do you think Weah will now get some playing time?
Ooh, intriguing. Yeah, that seems like what you would do in that situation.
I'm happy that they wrapped it up so early.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah. So Man City wrapped up their title today, but I don't. Tim Weah doesn't play for Man City. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. I think he's gonna get playing time. I mean, he's already obviously kind of been on the cusp for whatever other games, and when people have been injured, being able to get some minutes. So I imagine he'll get some game time. Probably not starts, but he'll probably be that striker sub coming on and at like the 70th minute. So that'd be good. I mean, and again, like we talked about before, if you're a goal scorer and you score goals, you're going to get more playing time. So here's hoping that he gets one of those subs and then super subs it and scores a goal and then earns a couple more appearances.
Yeah, I mean, the remaining games are against, well, let's see. I mean, none of the remaining games are against teams that are like in, well, I guess Ren is in the top half of the table. Bordeaux, I believe, is in the top half of the table. Or, no, Bordeaux is 10th, so right on that edge. But everyone else is in the bottom half of the table. So, I mean,
these are good games.
Yeah, these are great games for him, potentially. All right. Do you have anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I don't think so. Actually, I just saw that PSG beat Monaco 7-1.
I know. Ridiculous.
PSG is just like, it's like, must be like a different experience. You know, and they've won games like 8-0. It's just not real. How come no other teams? Well, I mean, obviously, like Lyon is a good team, but like, man, what? It's just weird how lopsided some leagues are.
It feels like a cheat code, right? It feels like that lack of satisfaction you feel when you give yourself infinite lives in Super Mario.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Monaco are a good team too. Marseille, Lyon. There are good teams in Ligue 1, but it's just not an evil level playing field right now.
Not at all.
Yeah. God bless the parody of the MLS. All right, let's run away. I do want to quick say thank you to all the Columbus Crew people. I forgot to say that last week. They were really supportive of our interview with Tim Myers, got a lot of love on Twitter. So just before I forgot, wanted to say thank you. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at SoftTattooFC. You can
always... Hey, one more thing.
Never. What?
What do you think about the men's team scheduling friendlies with England and Italy in November?
What I think is funny is that America seems to want to announce the friendly with England, but they don't want to announce the friendly with Italy yet.
Why? Why is that?
I don't know. It's like, so the Italian FA has already announced the friendly, but the US hasn't. And then for the for the English game, I saw something from like whatever US soccer source talking about that friendly, but not the Italian one. I don't know. So something must be coming up the works.
Yeah. That seems. It seems typical to have a start-stop, just disjointed communication strategy from U.S. soccer. But nonetheless, I'm excited to see like some good friendlies on the docket. And I mean, that's what we want to see, right? Playing some top teams, that kind of thing. Who knows who they'll get to play in those friendlies, but it should be good.
Yeah, and please reach out to us, softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com. You can tell us all about your dockets and what's on them. Thank you so much for listening.